Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
For you. When it comes to Pfizer, they get a big pat on the back for what they're doing. But the problem is the rollout is going to be a lot slower in the U.S. Not so in the U.K., but in the U.S., a different story. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney. So let me be the bearer of bad news here if you were hanging your hat on Pfizer. Remember, they're still in Moderna, and it's not that Pfizer is not going to have the vaccine, and they're not going to get the FDA approval. The problem is if you take a skyscraper like the Willis Tower, which used to be the Sears Tower in Chicago, and you go, oh, about halfway up, maybe I'll say 80-some floors, maybe a little less, all the paper that they have to get through, all the data is that high if you stacked it up. I wish I could take credit for that analogy, but the analogy of the building I heard on CNBC, and I was stunned by this, and I realized that they had to go through a lot of the work that had been done in this 44,000 person trial. I mean, that's a ton of clinical data, but I didn't realize that they hadn't already started doing that. In the UK, they were doing it in real time, what they call a rolling basis. So the regulators were able to review the data while it was going on until there was enough evidence to support a formal authorization. That's what they call it. That's how you speed up the assessment of promising drugs or vaccines. Otherwise, it takes forever, right? Even under normal, I'll call them normal circumstances. But in the U.S., that didn't happen. So you have to submit an application. You have to review all the safety information. You have to make sure there's no cracks. You have to make sure it's all solid. And then you have to review all of that information. It all gets submitted. So that is a huge amount of paperwork. I mean, seriously. It's going to take a while for that to happen. So that backs it up by at least a couple of weeks. And then the first doses would be distributed, and then that would take a couple of weeks for that to happen. So there's a big difference in what we're talking about here. And also the size of the UK population versus the United States. And immunizing everyone who wants a vaccine now, what's really being said, the real timetable is, it's probably going to take more than a year. So you heard what I just said. More than a year. It looked like, oh boy, everybody that wants a vaccine, you could have that by May, maybe June. And I still think there is some good evidence that we might be able to hurry up that timeline, because there's more than just Pfizer, Moderna. There's others that are also trying to get on the warp speed, game, trying to get there as fast as they can. But when you look at it and you look at to make sure that it's safe and at least 50% effective, it's going to be backed up initially for at least weeks. Although some of it is already here. So the COVID-19 vac went from Brussels to Chicago O'Hare International on Friday, and it's here. I mean, there's some of it that's already here. Some of the dosages are already here. And remember, one of the things the current president said, Trump, is he accused the FDA without proof of working to slow the COVID-19 vaccine development process. But now, because they had summoned the FDA commissioner to discuss why they haven't moved faster to authorize the vaccine. So now it shows you the way we do it is not as fast as what they did in the UK. So to make the right decision, they got to go through the process. They don't have the real time data that they had in the UK. Right? So there you have it. And this is when we've had 2,800 COVID deaths in a single day. Hospitals are just pushed to the limits. And in California, there's a lockdown that's happening of 3 weeks. It depends on the county as to when that completely rolls out, but it's absolutely happening. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, talked to Californians on Thursday and told them what to expect and the reasons why, because of the beds, because of hospitalizations and the rise and how they've been hit so hard, that this would be the only way to try and knock this out. So then you do the math and you think about the holidays, and then you're coming off of Thanksgiving, and now we're barreling down towards Hanukkah, Christmas, etc. And it's going to be interesting to see how many people fly, what people ultimately do. Are there going to be people that do get together anyway and think that they're okay or wear masks? I mean, these are the same scenarios we've been talking about for the last couple of months. And then what we saw on the 4th of July or Memorial Day or Labor Day, the same questions just keep bubbling up in what has been a very long 2020. And we're putting our faith in the people who are there on the front lines of looking at the vaccine, looking at the data, analyzing it, and then rolling it out. And because people are weary of it, and because people are also concerned about the safety of the vaccine, high-profile folks are going to get the vaccine and do it live or have it rolled out there on video or do streaming or whatever it might be, but to show that they're sure it's safe, they feel confident in it. As Anthony Fauci has been tapped by Biden to continue on in his role and to oversee what's happening with COVID, said that he would get a vaccine and his family would, he would tell them to be vaccinated as well. So you have three former presidents who have jumped on that idea of we're going to do it, and that's Clinton and Bush and Obama. All three of them say that they'll do that and let people see that, hey, this is what we're doing. It's safe. But will people buy into that? What are we going to see now with the process of the approval? I mean, all these are questions that are just hanging out there in the balance, and it's ultimately going to be decisions that have to be made by families, by individuals, and how they feel and where they live and what they know. And this is what I say about information. There's incredible information out there. There's access to information. There's also disinformation, and there's slanted information. So you decide for yourself when you look at things and when you hear things to put it through your own funnel to know what you believe to be right. What do you think is right for you? I know I believe that putting the mask on to run to the store, to be around people that you don't know, that you're not living with, just makes good sense and is not a big deal. Social distancing is not that difficult. It is if you're at a party of 500 people in Malibu and you're falling off the balcony, well, then you don't care and you're not worried about it. And we've seen some of those things crop up, and we continue to see some of those things. That makes a difference. All right, we're talking about what else? Money and the stimulus and bipartisan cooperation. What does it all mean? Find out.
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it, but only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
The stress levels of Americans may be at an all-time high. From education to business to basic needs to politics, the 2020 pandemic-related stressors are pushing many of us to near breaking point. That's why you should consider the stress and pain-relieving products from sunny-bay.com, like our lavender neck wraps and pads infused with premium Washington lavender buds. They relieve tension and relax with a soothing scent of lavender. And lifestyle expert Jennifer Bonner recommends products from Sunny Bay.
Sunny Bay's hands-free neck wraps should be your go-to pain relief solution.
Give gifts to family and friends that relieve stress and pain. Give love and care by giving the best. Give pillows, neck wraps, and body wraps from sunny-bay.com, a Biomed DB design company. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
This is sponsored by Amazon. This holiday season, Amazon is delivering smiles to charities across the country with the help of celebrity partners Gabrielle Union and Ali Raisman. And it's easy for customers to join them in giving back. Kate Scarpa, Amazon spokesperson.
We're proud to support charities that have been impacted by the challenges of this year. And customers can also join us in giving back by shopping through Amazon Smile. By starting at smile.amazon.com, customers can find incredible holiday deals, low prices, and convenient shopping, with the added bonus that Amazon will donate a portion of their purchase price directly to the charity of their choice at no cost to them.
Customers can also donate items to charities directly at smile.amazon.com/charity lists, where nonprofits create wish lists of the items needed most. Additionally, shoppers can donate to Toys for Tots by saying, "Alexa, donate to Toys for Tots," or make a monetary donation to a charity of their choice by saying, "Alexa, I want to make a donation." Learn more and give back this season at smile.amazon.com.
Struggling and who were looking for that stimulus, it looks like it may happen. Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi, I'd love to be a fly on the wall to hear them. I'd love to be a fly on the wall if they were like on the same elevator, just the two of them, and what the conversation would be. But anyway, they're talking now about the stimulus package, and it's gaining momentum. And part of that is because there is that $908 billion economic relief proposal that's bipartisan. And we've known about that. That's been on the table for a couple of days. But the framework and filling it in, you know, just because they announced, oh, we've got this stimulus, to breathe the real life into the thing, it has to happen. If you're going to have a COVID emergency relief framework, you got to do it. And so Democrats have met, Republicans have met, they've met together, some of them, and it looks like they might be able to come up with some kind of the right kind of compromise that will help with business, especially because you've got the winter months, the fear about devastation for our economy. And it's true. Restaurants, hotels, airlines, even Southwest announced that they could be laying off people for the first time ever in their 50-year history, that they're going to send out furlough notices, but this might save that, which that would include pilots, that would include people that are taking reservations all the way down the line, almost everybody in the company in some way would be affected. Bus companies, just everything hit so hard by the pandemic, mass layoffs, all of this dire, horrible news that we're hearing about the economy, the economy, the economy. So $288 billion would be for U.S. business, maybe a little bit more. And then some of that would go to smaller firms. So they're trying to come up with the framework for how that happens. And then there would be relief for those that are on unemployed. There'd be a $300 kick up, and that would help. It's not the $600, but the $300 would certainly help. And the unemployment benefits, of course, that's huge. What's the framework for that? Remember in March, it was $600 per week that it jumped up, and now the $300, if that happens, that would be a good thing because you've got 20.2 million who are getting jobless aid at this point. And the long odds of getting employment during the winter, pretty tough, right? Especially with lockdowns and everything else and cutting back on people. So you got, how are you paying the bills? How are you staving off what I call elimination? Elimination meaning you're just, it's just so bleak. You, no matter what you do and no matter what anyone tells you and no matter how many, you know, hands up you get of, you know, let me help you up, let me pull you up, which is brilliant and happening in communities everywhere. Ultimately, there still has to be something that you can reach for that can get you through that rough patch. So you've got Charles Grassley, the Republican from Iowa, and Ron Wyden, the Democrat from Oregon, who are the two leading members of this Senate Finance Committee, and they're trying to iron out all the details of the unemployment section, especially so that they could move that as fast as possible and get that approved. And again, that would change what will happen to so many people. Local state governments smashed by the pandemic. $160 billion can go in that direction, that could flow in that direction. And there's been some controversy there because, you know, what is it, government bailout? And what does that mean? And how do you determine who's getting what? That whole thing again. So I think it's not across the board that both sides absolutely love it. It just means they realize the severity of where we are and especially where we're headed when you talk about how tough it is, again, in those winter months. So watch to see what happens because it may happen by December 11th. How about that? Because it definitely was not looking like it. All right, how about this for raising money? So how much do you think President Trump has raised since mid-October? Now, we keep talking about the $170 million figure, which is impressive, but overall since mid-October, $495 million. Wow. And do you know of that money, $207.5 million of it came in after the election? That's extraordinary, right? That's incredible. I mean, it exceeds fundraising records that he set himself for even a higher high. So that means if you look at it, and I saw this brilliant story in the Washington Post, how they broke it down way better than I even was looking at the numbers and breaking it down. So head on, I was looking at the overall big number. But if you look at specific days between October 15th and November 23rd, so a couple days before Thanksgiving, he raised an average of nearly $13 million a day. That's massive. And part of that, emails, fundraising appeals, all of that. The Make America Great Again Committee, the PAC, the New Leadership PAC, Save America, all of that struck a nerve. And so, of course, all this will be made public in federal filings, but those are pretty tremendous fundraising numbers. I mean, just incredible. So I think what his campaign manager said, not think, but what he's saying, is that he's, of course, there's still challenges with the election process, and they're talking about building on gains from the election and saying, you know, where do we go from here with the Senate, the House, all that kind of stuff, and that the money raised since the election probably goes into Save America, that political action committee, that the president can use for a bunch of different things when he leaves office, including legal fights over the certification of the election, which haven't gained any traction in the courts, but doesn't mean that they wouldn't gain it. Who knows? Because there's not every single court has said no to that, has basically ruled there's not enough evidence. And the surge of contribution is from, ready for this? Are you shocked? I know you're not going to be shocked by this. It's come from small dollar donors. So that means a base of loyal people who contribute when they feel he's under siege or facing an unfair political attack. Those are small donations, not the big donations. 75% of each contribution to the Make America Great Again Committee goes first toward the Save America Leadership Pact. The rest is shared by the campaign and the Republican Party. Wow. So certainly when the president leaves office, and I've already said this plenty of times, he will continue to tap into that, will have a voice, and it's not shocking if he's healthy, wants to do it, that he would run in 2024, because that would be the next time he would be eligible to do that. All right, this is certainly a break from what we would normally see. Big movie pictures. Theaters are dying. Very few people are going to theaters. I've talked about it. It's almost like a safe place to go in some ways, because you can pull in the parking lot and you could take your driver's test. You could race around it because there's hardly any cars. So Warner Brothers on Thursday, I think, really shook up the entertainment world, saying it's going to put all of its 2021 movies, 17 of them, like Dune, In the Heights, The Matrix 4, they're going to take all of them. And at the same day they play in theaters, they're going to play on HBO Max. So how about that? So that will, I would think, would help the streaming service. And what a shift that is. I mean, Dune isn't slated for release until October. Matrix 4, December 2021. And Warner Brothers and corporate parent AT&T are not reacting to the pandemic, but seeking to boost HBO Max, I guess, at the expense of theaters. And, you know, this is the thing. There is this practice that they have in Hollywood called windowing. They bring movies to the theaters first, and now that's going to change the game if they're bringing it to streaming services and theaters. So will people mostly get their entertainment from home and forget the movies in the future? Does that forever really knock movie theater owners? Does it really bring them down in what normally would be an uplifting time where they would have some of these first-run movies and this is the only way you could see it? Wow. Shocker. That's a big, big shocker. Stay with us. I'll meet you on the other side.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The United States has now recorded more than 14 million cases of coronavirus since the beginning of the pandemic. More than 200,000 cases were recorded on Thursday, driving that total over 14 million. The death toll has now also passed 275,000. While the country awaits the approval of vaccines against the virus, the intelligence community believes that one country has been trying to steal the research behind those shots. The Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, tells CBS News they have evidence that China has tried to steal the work of scientists looking for a vaccine.
Adding insult to injury, it shows that China is attempting to, has been attempting to access our research into COVID-19. So the pandemic that was created by China's actions, they've attempted to steal our research.
This is USA Radio News. A town in Alaska was hit Wednesday by devastating mudslides. Lance Bry has more from the USA Radio News West Coast Bureau.
Alaska authorities say six people are missing and four homes have been destroyed after multiple mudslides were reported in the community of Haines on Wednesday. Heavy rains in the area have created numerous mudslides. The largest was approximately 600 feet wide and trapped about 30 people. Haines is 90-plus miles north of Juneau. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
And the Wisconsin Supreme Court has declined to hear the Trump campaign's lawsuit to have more than 200,000 ballots disqualified and the state's election results decertified. In an opinion issued Thursday, the court said the case would be better suited to start in one of the state's lower courts where the facts of the case could be presented and debated. Lawyers for the president said they plan on following the court's opinion and taking the next step with their case soon. This is USA Radio News.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American-made with American ingredients employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
I must have dreamed a thousand dreams. Been haunted by a million screams. But I could hear them all.
Wow, excited this time around to take you to Nigeria and introduce you to a very smart man who will make you very smart if you pay attention to what he has written. His book is called Mastering the Art of Managing Money. Shafi Ndansa joins us now. And Shafi, one of the things that stuck out to me in the brief conversation that we had before we jumped on the air together is your analogy about money. And your book talks about what you need to do to manage money properly. So let's start there. First of all, why did you write the book?
Thank you very much, Kate. The major reason why I wrote the book was because after observing clearly the impact of the 2007-2008 global economic crisis on companies, on individuals, and economies across the globe, and the looming European sovereign debt crisis around 2010, about exactly 10 years ago, I came to realize that the world is yet to see the last of economic crisis. And this economic crisis impacts individuals, businesses, societies, and nation states differently, depending on the levels of their exposure. So it became crystal clear to me that it is important to have more like a cookbook, a rules book, that can help individuals and businesses and nation states address the concerns that arise as a result of economic downturns, of making sure that they prudently manage financial resources at their disposal. And at the end of the day, be happy about the experiences and the choices they have made. So, and basically, I knew I was looking at the intersection between financial success in financial management or money matters, and at the same time, being happy and contented as an individual. So there was need for a connection. Now, as someone from the finance background, somebody who has had extensive training from the finance background, I faced a dilemma of condensing in simple language a lot of the technical jargons and the terms that I learned in the process of becoming a financial professional. And I came to realize again that indeed the science of financial management is not enough. It is important for people to be skilled in the art of managing finances such that they can approach the issue of financial management, money matters, more strategically than just being the reactive mode that people usually take. I came to observe, for instance, that businesses fail, most businesses fail as a result of poor financial management, as a result, in addition to many other factors. However, if financial resources is evaluated, is assessed critically, you will come to realize that a lot of people fail in the management of money more because they do not pay good attention to the way and manner in which they manage resources. A lot of times I came to realize that individuals are more reactive in, when it comes to the implementation phase of their financial plans. Most, they are hardly proactive. They hardly strategically approach the management of financial resources. And this was a major drawback, a major reason why a lot of people are not successful in managing their financial resources. I also came to realize that partly because of issues like emotions, issues of poor ethics, issues of not really understanding, having the basic understanding of what an asset and liability is from the practical dimension, a lot of people also fail in financial management. So in the management of money. So the ideas that informed this book was based on the need to practically demonstrate that every individual, every business, every society is capable of prudent management of its financial resources. And at the end of the day, being not only successful about it, but being happy at the decisions they have taken about their finances. So I think that was one of the major motivations. I realized that the world will still experience economic crisis from time to time. People will be thrown into bankruptcies. Businesses will be thrown into bankruptcies. Societies will be thrown into bankruptcies, and they will need to come out of it. But rather than depending on resources, it is time for people to depend on resourcefulness. It is important that people look inwards. They look at the skills that they have. They can strategically apply and deploy their resources. And at the end of the day, be happy from the successes they make out of it and choose indeed contentment at the end of the day.
I like the example that you gave about the cookbook. So, and we, of course, we want people to pick up your book, Mastering the Art of Managing Money, but give us a little sneak peek. What do I need in my cookbook? That analogy is brilliant.
Okay, now, what I did in the book was, first of all, the first part of the book is what I call background lessons. I mean, it establishes, for instance, chapter one talks about why it is important, you understand, for us to manage our monies properly. Then secondly, chapter two reveals that why the science of financial management is not sufficient. You know, chapter two still under, what do you call it, part one of the book. It makes it clear to you that I think I recall listening about 50 technical jargons from the financial management industry. And whether how thoroughly familiar, I asked the question how thoroughly familiar people were about it. And the message was that regardless of your level of familiarity, you don't need to be familiar with these technical jargons to be successful in financial management from the practical point of view. Then I talked about how emotions, particularly, especially negative emotions, come to interfere in the process of taking strategic financial decisions, and so on and so forth, and the different dimensions of success, depending on how people define them. Then, basically, in part two of the book is where I laid out five different phases of activity that are critical in the mastery of money management matters from the practical point of view. The first phase, I call the knowing phase, which is about really understanding the basics, those basic things you need to understand about financial management, about money matters to be successful in the art of money management. So phase one was the knowing phase. Then phase one talked about the knowing phase. Then phase two talked about the planning phase, whereby this time around you need to have a vision of, you need to have a financial vision of your future, or a vision of your financial future, what you intend to achieve in each particular area, and you need to have a clear, concrete plan and the goals towards achieving those vision, the vision. Then there's what we call phase three, the strategic assessment phase. When you identify your financial vision and then you move into the strategic assessment phase, in the phase of strategic assessment, what you're doing is that trying to just, you're prioritizing, you're justifying and prioritizing all the financial decisions you need to take so that you can more like have something like a scale of preference for all the financial decisions you need to take. And based on your scale of preference, you decide to engage. Then the fourth phase is what I call the action phase. It is in the action phase that you bring your entire financial strategy to life, because you now go into the doing phase of making sure that you act in a manner that guarantees a likelihood of your achieving your financial objectives. Basically, in the action phase, what happens is you've had the plans, you know the basic knowledge that you need to understand, then you have the plans on in terms of what you want to achieve. You have justified and prioritized all those things you need to do. Then when you come into the action phase, you now take concrete steps in achieving, in actualizing what you... Now, when you get to the action phase, there's something that's instrumental about the message that I need to send. It is far better. A lot of times, people keep themselves in the reactive mode when they go into the action phase, that is the implementation phase of their financial strategy. And that is not very good because it makes you more reactive. You need to be more proactive. You need to imagine all the possibilities and be ready to them. And it is important that while implementing your action phase, you're mindful of the flexibility that you have built into your financial plan. Then once you're through with the action phase and the results begin to come out, you go into what I call the choice phase. Because in the act of financial management, it is important that at the end of when the outcome of every major financial decision emerges, you need to choose whether to be happy about the experience or not. And that indeed it is a function of choice for every individual. You know, that you need to choose happiness and contentment.
Boy, I so agree. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I want to make sure, Shafi, that we get to this because we have just a couple of minutes left. What do you hope? You've given us so much great information. What do you hope people take away from reading the book, Mastering the Art of Managing Money?
When you read this book, you should see it as what I call something like a permanent companion, something to give you guidance and insights and illumination each time you're faced with major financial decisions. You should take away more like a book that seeks to illuminate your path when you're faced with a major or even minor financial decisions that may have serious implications. And because regardless of your state of society, whether you're successful, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're young or old, male or female, it does not matter. Because at each time, you're trying to optimize your net worth based on the value of the quality of financial decisions you take. So it is a constant, taking financial decisions is a constant reality of everyday life for every human being. And at any stage, if you don't manage this carefully, you run the risk of reducing your net worth and exposing yourself to undesirable financial consequences. So it is something that people are expected to keep as regular companions and from time to time, draw illumination from the ideas, draw insights. Indeed, I believe that every individual has an aspect of the book that will speak to the person's personal experience. So people are not just expected to read this book and keep it on the shelf. I mean, of their libraries, they're expected to visit it from time to time in order to find deeper meaning and insights for the decisions that they have to take, because every scenario changes, but the principles are there, the code of ethics, so that at each time you're taking financial decisions, you're likely more guaranteed of having success. And awareness about how emotions come in, this is a major area again. It's important that people are personally aware of how emotions could come in to affect the cost of their financial decision making. It's a very tricky area. A lot of people are too emotive when it comes to finances and money.
Perfect. I completely agree with you. Don't keep it on the shelf. Perfect place to end this. Don't get emotional. Wow, you've given us a lot to think about. Get the book, Mastering the Art of Managing Money. Shafi, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate it. Thank you.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease.
A 1 pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
It's not over. Sadly, our nation is going through tough times again, with no end in sight, and nobody knows what might happen next year. That's why it's a good idea to plan ahead, so you aren't caught off guard. Nothing's more important than having enough food to eat, and we're here to help. We're My Patriot Supply, America's leading emergency preparedness company. We provide long-term emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage. When grocery stores run empty or disasters strike, our foods will be there when you need it most. Act now and secure at least a 4-week emergency food kit full of tasty meals that provide 2,000 calories a day. We have dozens of emergency food storage kits to choose from. When the government tells you not to go out, you can have the peace of mind that comes from being prepared. When you order from MyPatriotSupply.com, your food will arrive discreetly at your doorstep in no time. Prepare today. Time is short. MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
He's in our virtual green room, is Richard Whitney. He's written a book called The Amherst Protocol. Richard, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Your book is fascinating because you tackle something that I think is so broad, and you cover all kinds of things. Like you talk about cloning, the stem cell therapy, gene splicing, all of that. And in the book, and you talk about how it becomes nearly routine in 2042, which is so fascinating to think that it possibly could be. So tell us why you wrote this book and how you pulled this novel all together.
Well, the reason I wrote the book was many of the incidences that have occurred, you know, in the last 20, 30 years where things have gotten rather, how should I say, hectic. People are just not liking the United States. We're just under siege at this point, and it's tearing at the very fabric of our country. And so I thought about how it would look like in another 10 or 20 years, and realized that, you know, one of the best ways to do it would be to attack through a biological weapon. So that's where I got the basic premise for the overall book. Created a kind of a suspenseful, or tried to create a suspenseful setting for that discovery, and hopefully have succeeded in doing so.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you talk about Clayton Tucker and his colleagues at the Dallas Observer. And tell me about your background and how you came up with that, because we write about what we know about. So how did you come up with all of that?
Well, you know, I don't I have neither a medical nor a journalist background, but I have always had a great admiration and respect for journalists. I think over the past 4 years we've seen the importance of journalism and the attacks that can be launched against it. But it is important. It serves an important function in our society. And so I kind of studied up, if you will, did some research on journalists and what it takes to be a journalist. And I didn't actually interview a journalist, but I kind of read the biographical pieces that were available and that sort of thing. Because what better way for the discovery of the story by a reporter who happens to stumble on it in looking into and just doing some basic research, if you will, on another story, he stumbles on this, and I think I was trying to show the importance of having that free press available to share with the people of this country what's going on around them. So that was how Clayton Tucker came into existence.
Yeah. For you, the characters and developing the characters, do they kind of rattle around in your head, or do they just sort of pour out of you?
Yes. They do both. I joke that, the reason I wrote the book is to get the voices out of my head. Because they kind of are, I'll start thinking about, as I'm writing the follow-up to the protocol, the Amherst protocol, I have new people in there trying to tell their story, so I've got to get them out of there. But the story writes itself. I just happen to be the vehicle that transfers it from somewhere out there to a piece of paper.
Yeah. One of the things that you talk about, and you mentioned that you brushed over that, is that, you look at Clayton Tucker and his pals, and I said that in the beginning, and you talk about the two reporters that come up, or they uncover the ultimate biological weapon called the Alistair. Tell us about the Alistair.
The Alistair. Do you want to? Well, the Alistair, as I recall, was a Greek demon who kind of roams around the world and does nasty things to people, as I recall my Greek mythology.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that. I'd have to really look it up at this point. But it seems to me that's what it was. It was kind of just a general demon that caused mischief everywhere. But I don't want to say too much about the Alistair as it exists in the book, because, spoiler alert.
Yeah, I was thinking that. We'll tell you that there is this biological weapon, and the name fits what it is for sure. Mm-hmm. And how do you get that information back? So you mentioned that now you've got a follow-up to the Amherst protocol that you're working on?
Yeah, I am. I'm working on the kind of follow-up. The working title is the Nemesis Sanction. So.
Nemesis, I like it. So what do you hope people take away from reading this first one, the Amherst Protocol?
What do I hope? Under it all, I'm hoping that people will start to examine relationships they have with one another and how they act with and towards other people. Believe it or not. That's kind of what I'm hoping, the subtext, if you will. Writing is not my profession. I think some people will say, well, that's obvious from reading his book, you're not a professional writer. But I do my best, and I'm hoping that, in all of that, that some story, if you will kind of, leave them scratching their head a little bit, you know, where is that going? Where is this, all this, you know? So I want them to, I'm hoping that people will start to look at that issue.
Yeah. The so if writing's not your profession, lots of people write books because they have the stories. You talk about having the characters in your head, and the books are absolutely wonderful, and you think that they've been doing this for a long time. So what did you do for a living, or what do you do for a living?
I'm a forensic psychologist. So working with people that are kind of off the beaten track is kind of what I've done most of my life.
Wow. That could fit into some of what you're talking about, really, when you look at working as a forensic psychologist. That has to be interesting. So what do your colleagues say about your book?
Well, that's why I use the pseudonym. I have one or two that I've shared it with, and they're fine with it. You know, I'm not presenting anything as a psychologist in this book. It's pure fantasy.
And I think it's really well written, so I think you do have a knack for coming up with a story and weaving a tale. You're being very modest. And this is one that you will get lost in, because I talk about books that you get lost in. And again, it's called The Amherst Protocol. Richard Whitney, thank you so much for coming on.
Sure, it was my pleasure. Thanks for doing this, Kate.
All right, so I said it, Richard is being modest. It is a good story. So think about this. As he said, you have these reporters. They uncover something incredible because they're preparing to cover the anniversary of the first human heart transplant using a cloned heart. And I said this at the top of this, cloning, stem cell therapy, and gene splicing, which you have to really expand your mind on this, are routine in 2042. Like, that's just a nothing thing. Cloning is nothing. Can you imagine that it's an easier process? And certainly that means medicine has advanced. So then you have medicine wrapped into this. And then you got to go way back to where the first heart transplant initially was performed. And in the novel, he talks about this and what they discover with this pharmaceutical company and the research that they do, and in attempting to come up with the issue of rejection during the original transplant, but then what they learn from there, it's so fascinating. And again, it's just like Richard said, you know, I'm not going to give away the ending of the book or the meat, but just think of massive advancement and a secretive project and what happens in a lab. And how scary that can be, which is why I think that's his point. In the real world, what happens if you don't have people that are looking under the hood, so to speak, and they're out there watching what's happening, and there aren't reports of something that could end up being nefarious. But anyway, very well done. The Amherst Protocol, I mentioned already, it's on Amazon.com. You can get it there. And once again, thanks so much for listening to the show. Remember, we're all in this together.
This is sponsored by Amazon. This holiday season, Amazon is delivering smiles to charities across the country with the help of celebrity partners Gabrielle Union and Ali Raisman. And it's easy for customers to join them in giving back. Kate Scarpa, Amazon spokesperson.
We're proud to support charities that have been impacted by the challenges of this year. And customers can also join us in giving back by shopping through Amazon Smile. By starting at smile.amazon.com, customers can find incredible holiday deals, low prices, and convenient shopping, with the added bonus that Amazon will donate a portion of their purchase price directly to the charity of their choice at no cost to them.
Customers can also donate items to charities directly at smile.amazon.com/charity lists, where nonprofits create wish lists of the items needed most. Additionally, shoppers can donate to Toys for Tots by saying, "Alexa, donate to Toys for Tots," or make a monetary donation to a charity of their choice by saying, "Alexa, I want to make a donation." Learn more and give back this season at smile.amazon.com.